China is still refusing to share the information we need to keep people safe.
The top U.S. diplomat continues the U.S. salvo against China. This is Friday, the 8th of May, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, the United Nations asks for more money to help poor countries. The U.S. job market is in a free fall. The coronavirus pandemic has caused major problems for migrants and those trying to help them. And we go to the Philippines to see what has happened to one of its largest media outlets, silenced by the government. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Top U.S. and Chinese officials continued their sharp exchanges over the origins and response during the early days of the coronavirus outbreak. Beijing is accusing Secretary of State Mike Pompeo of playing politics, claiming COVID-19 originated in a Wuhan laboratory. Pompeo is pressing for more information. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has more.
There appears to be no argument the coronavirus outbreak began in Wuhan. The dispute is how it happened. On Wednesday, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo faced intense questioning from reporters over his recent remarks that there is enormous evidence the virus originated in a Wuhan lab.
Here's how this could get solved really quickly. The Chinese Communist Party could do what they're committed to do under their obligation to the World Health Organization. To be transparent, to be open, to do the simple things that nations all around the world do to make sure that pandemics like this don't get out of control.
Meanwhile, in Beijing, China's foreign ministry once again denounced Pompeo for his remarks, accusing him of playing domestic politics.
Mr. Pompeo spoke repeatedly, but he has never presented evidence because there was just no such thing. So I think that this question should be left to scientists and medical control experts to answer, and the politicians should not keep lying on this issue for the needs of domestic politics.
Other countries want more information about the virus outbreak in Wuhan, including Germany, Britain, and Australia. Pompeo said Wednesday China should let its scientists come forward.
China is still refusing to share the information we need to keep people safe, such as viral isolates, clinical specimens, and details about the many COVID-19 patients in December 2019, not to mention patient zero.
Pompeo said his calls for transparency from China are not about politics, but about saving lives. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
The United Nations has announced it is increasing its appeal to fight the coronavirus pandemic in fragile and vulnerable countries from $2 billion to $6.7 billion. Associated Press correspondent Zuria Shakley has more.
UN Humanitarian Chief Mark Lowcock says a peak of the pandemic is not expected to hit the world's poorest countries for 3 to 6 months. But he says there's already evidence of incomes plummeting and jobs disappearing, food supplies falling and prices soaring, and children missing vaccinations and meals. Since the original appeal on the 25th of March, the UN says $1 billion has been raised to support efforts across 37 fragile countries to tackle COVID-19. The updated appeal includes 9 additional vulnerable countries. I'm Zeria Shakili.
These are among the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. The United States is rallying support to back Taiwan's observer status in the World Health Assembly, the decision-making body of the World Health Organization leading up to its annual meeting later this month. India has launched the biggest evacuation of its citizens in decades, deploying aircraft and Navy ships to bring home thousands of Indians stranded in foreign countries. The United States has denounced as appalling reports that Iranian border guards tortured and drowned dozens of migrants from Afghanistan last week to prevent their entry into Iran. Japan on Thursday authorized the antiviral drug remdesivir to treat coronavirus patients, according to the government. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The U.S. government has released another snapshot of an American jobs market in freefall due to the coronavirus pandemic. AP reporter Sagar Magani has more.
It's a historic collapse. 3.2 million Americans filed for jobless aid last week, 33.5 million in just 7 weeks.
They just signal huge, huge job losses throughout the economy, across all the states, across all industries.
PNC Bank's Gus Fauché says job losses will continue growing until more states start to reopen, though even then the recovery will take time. Roughly one in five Americans employed back in February are now out of jobs. The unemployment rate then was a half-century low 3.5%. The government tomorrow will release what's likely to be the worst monthly jobs report since modern records have been kept, with the unemployment rate expected to hit at least 16%. Sagar Magani, Washington.
The Brookings Institution says at most only about 50% of jobs can be fully performed from home. Other studies suggest that number may be high. The rest of the workforce still has to go to work, assuming they still have jobs, no matter how dangerous. Anna Rice narrates this story by Daria Duggett.
Applause can be heard in hundreds of cities around the world each night. People are going outside, so first responders, doctors, and nurses can hear thanks for the job they're doing to fight COVID-19. But those professionals are not the only employees going to workplaces every day. Millions of lower-income people who deliver packages, work cash registers, and repair elevators are still on the job, and many don't have paid time off or sick leave.
They're on the front lines in the sense that they have a lot of contact with other people, and therefore they may get sick themselves. They're increasing their own exposure, as well as increasing the exposure to their family members.
According to the U.S. Labor Department, more than half of highly skilled, higher-waged workers can telework, while only 1 in 20 service industry employees can do the same.
There's a real demographic and income divide in the two groups. So the predominant numbers of people who have to go to work are the lower wage service employees in healthcare, in hospitality, in grocery and retail and warehouse, even in production processes like food production, which tends to be a lower wage, immigrant-dominated manufacturing industry.
Tom Flores works in a supermarket in California.
Of course I'm worried. When I go to work, I pray to God that everything stays fine. But I feel I need to keep coming to work because a lot of families depend on what I do.
Many Americans feel the pressure and feel lucky to stay on the job, considering 30 million people filed jobless claims by late April, which shattered all previous records. And even those with employment are being squeezed, with a recent study revealing a majority of U.S. workers would struggle to cover an unexpected bill of $400.
We're living paycheck to paycheck, and without paychecks, we're going to see people losing their homes.
The U.S. government has allocated an additional $250 billion for unemployment compensation, on top of sending most Americans a $1,200 stimulus check. Larger families got more. Experts say these measures are timely and necessary, but they may not be enough for people who live in more expensive urban areas.
Cost of living standards are different. So for someone in New York, that's probably not going to make a huge difference. For people in rural spaces where housing costs tend to be lower, other expenses tend to be lower, it's going to be more helpful.
Congress is working on potentially approving another economic stimulus package to aid people who lost their jobs due to the pandemic. Fadat Yedienguts in Washington, NRIs, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia. A gas leak at a chemical factory owned by a South Korean company in southern India early Thursday left at least 11 people dead and about 1,000 struggling to breathe. The leak, say officials, occurred while workers were preparing to restart the facility after a coronavirus lockdown was eased. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Rights groups like Human Rights Watch have decried the Philippine government's action to not renew national broadcaster ABS-CBN's franchise license, effectively removing the country's largest network from the airwaves. BOA's Steve Miller speaks with Quezon City-based journalist Stanley Gayete via Skype to get the latest reactions from Filipinos and what the network is doing to continue broadcasting.
2 days after the largest television broadcasting network in the Philippines went off the air, the ABS-CBN returned on air today, May 7, via its English cable station, ABS-CBN News Channel or ANC. Also airing on new media platform and through its global channel, which is the Filipino Channel or PFC. Aside from television broadcast, ABS-CBN is now maximizing its digital platforms, doing live stream on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and even on its website and via its mobile app, since these platforms are not part of the congressional franchise that expired this year. Through its program flagship TV Patrol, the primetime newscast of the said television channel aired again, presenting current news events including current issues on COVID-19 pandemic. Thursday morning, the reporters, writers, producers, directors, production staff and news anchors went back to their regular duties as if everything is normal.
So what's been some of the reaction from either politicians or the general public?
Celebrities of ABS-CBN also shared their sentiments while showing support after the said TV network went black on screen last Tuesday. Meanwhile, world boxing icon and Senator Manny Pacquiao on Wednesday said that the NTC should keep its promise to give ABS-CBN provisional permit to operate pending final congressional action on the network's franchise bid.
Originally, when this first happened, there wasn't any immediate response from ABS-CBN management. What can you give us as far as an update as to their courses of action?
ABS-CBN also today filed a 46-page petition to Supreme Court asking to stop the NTC's cease and desist order given last May 5. Since all lower courts' offices are physically closed due to COVID-19, pandemic, the ABS-CBN filed directly to Supreme Court to quickly process and resolve the issue on air. The Supreme Court will have a special session tomorrow and expected to discuss such important matters, including the television franchise renewal. Meanwhile, President Rodrigo Duterte decries reports linking him to ABS-CBN shutdown on Thursday. According to the Malacanang Palace, reports linking to the president to the shutdown of the broadcast operations were totally unfair and objectionable. The palace said it distanced the chief executive from the order of the regulators and the franchise is up to Congress.
The franchising license only covers the airwaves in the Philippines, but not the cable channels, not social media, streaming platforms, etc. And it's an interesting way that ABS-CBN is going about continuing broadcasting the news.
Yeah, I think, Steve, ABS-CBN planned also already this years before because they expected that this will happen since President Rodrigo Duterte was showing dismay on ABS-CBN after it did not air its election campaign.
VOA Steve Miller speaking with Quezon City-based journalist Stanley Gayete.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news alert from VOA Asia. A cruise ship being investigated in Australia for sparking coronavirus infections anchored in Manila Bay on Thursday to bring Filipino crew members home. The Ruby Princess joins at least 16 other cruise ships at anchor. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. The International Organization for Migration is warning that growing discrimination against migrants who often are blamed for spreading the coronavirus impede efforts to tackle the pandemic. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The coronavirus pandemic has dealt a serious blow to global migration. The International Organization for Migration reports work visas for migrants have practically come to a halt. And the resettlement of refugees and asylum seekers in third countries has been temporarily suspended. It says thousands of migrants are stranded in Southeast Asia, Africa, and Latin America because of border closures and travel restrictions. It says many migrants who want to return to countries of origin because of the pandemic are blocked and forced to live in difficult conditions with minimal care. IOM Director General Antonio Vitorino says migrants in countries of destination too often are denied access to health care. He says this puts them in danger of becoming infected with the virus, and it also endangers public health.
At the current moment, we are confronted with the fear, the reluctance, and the difficulty of access of migrants to health care. It's not just a question of fundamental rights. It's also the question of public health, of guaranteeing that access to health care by migrants is in the interest of the entire community.
IOM reports there are 272 million international migrants in the world. They provide an important source of income to many of the world's most impoverished countries. Vitorino says the pandemic will have a powerful impact on the global economic recession that lies ahead and on the subsequent recovery. He says the economic recession will lead to a dramatic drop in the remittances that migrants send back to their countries of origin.
The World Bank forecasts a drop in remittances to Africa during the current year of 30%, which means $20 billion will not be transferred to sustain the livelihood and the households of the families that stayed in the countries of origin.
In some countries, Vitorino says remittances amount up to 15% of their gross domestic product. He says migrants provide essential services to countries of destination. For example, he says migrants comprise 40% of healthcare workers in countries such as Britain, the United States, and Canada. He notes migrant seasonal workers are essential in harvesting a nation's agricultural crop. Despite the key role they play in a nation's economy, he says migrants usually do not benefit from the public safety nets of the countries in which they have settled. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
California, the most populous U.S. state, will begin its first phase of reopening this week. Stay-at-home measures have kept COVID-19 cases relatively low in the state, but testing for the disease has lagged. New initiatives by the governor and healthcare providers aim to rapidly change that. Matt Dibble reports.
California was the first state to enact a stay-at-home measure, and this early move has been praised for heading off a surge of the deadly virus. But the state has lagged in testing. With nearly 40 million residents, the Golden State has tested a smaller share of its population than almost any other state. Competition for scarce testing kits and personal protective equipment has hindered testing. As supplies become available, California Governor Gavin Newsom aims to quickly ramp up testing.
We are well on our way to meeting our 25,000 testing goal and getting to 60 to 80,000 very shortly thereafter.
Healthcare experts agree that reopening safely requires the kind of data that only widespread virus testing can provide. Public and private healthcare providers around the state are rapidly mobilizing. Kaiser Permanente is bringing this large testing facility online in record time.
We're actually opening up a 7,000 square foot lab that we stood up in like 4.5 to 5 weeks. It's like light speed. And we'll have the capacity to run about 10,000 tests a day.
But rolling out testing on a large scale has been hampered by the smallest things.
Believe it or not, one of the things that's in short supply are swabs to do the tests. And so we're in the process of actually working with a domestic manufacturer who can 3D print the swabs so that we can ramp up testing.
So far, most testing has focused on people with symptoms and those in contact with them, using a sample taken from the nose or throat. But there are also blood antibody tests that can tell if a person has been exposed to the virus without showing symptoms, information that may be critical for reopening society.
One of the big questions out there is, can we safely open things back up and not have big flare-ups of the disease? So that's where the population-based testing is going to become more readily important.
In a first for the United States, every resident of this rural town, Bolinas, California, was offered free COVID-19 testing administered by researchers from the University of California, San Francisco.
We wanted to understand what is the viral footprint in a community such as ours, and use that information to understand better community-wide spread.
Both swab tests and the blood antibody tests were administered to more than 1,800 people, nearly everyone in town, giving researchers a baseline with which to track the virus.
We're going to need to get to a place where we can do repeat testing. We know that on that day that that person got tested in Bolinas, they were negative. We don't know a day later. It's a window in time.
Many of California's new testing sites are in high-risk urban areas, as well as rural areas, with limited access to health care. Still, officials acknowledge there's a long way to go. For VOA News, Matt Dibble, Oakland, California.
Are my pets safe from coronavirus? There's no current evidence that cats and dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria such as E. coli and Salmonella that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit the websites at the World Health Organization and the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
We continue on VOA Asia. World-famous chef Jose Andres has mobilized his restaurants in Washington, D.C. and New York City to help those in need during the coronavirus pandemic by cooking and giving away free food. But because the scale of the national lockdown is so great, the chef has gone even further by turning giant stadiums into makeshift kitchens. Karina Bafrazian has the story.
D.C.-based chef Jose Andres announced his plans to use temporarily empty stadiums for charity purposes back in March when the coronavirus pandemic started to accelerate. To feed the many people who found themselves in need because of the national lockdown, Andres and his charity organization called World Central Kitchen needed a big kitchen. The National Park Baseball Stadium in Washington, D.C. was just about right.
We've used stadiums before, arenas before. They are so important. They are part of the community in the good times, but they are also an important part of being part of the community in emergency times. So inside here, we're using the kitchens. We're going to be producing thousands of meals, tens of thousands.
The stadium's staff was glad to help out.
We wanted to figure out what we could do with the ballpark to help people with COVID-19. We're very good at making a lot of food. We do it for all of our fans on a regular basis, and we have amazing facilities. So we reached out to Jose Andres' team and said, hey, we'd love to partner with you. Are you guys interested in using the ballpark for your kitchen operations here in Washington, D.C.?
The stadium's spacious kitchen allows 50 people to work side by side every day from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. The food is balanced and packed with nutrients, meat, vegetables, rice, and fruits. Cooked food is packed into containers and Uber Eats drivers deliver them to their destination. Hospitals, nursing homes, low-income homes, and areas where homeless people congregate. Despite the size of the operation, everyone involved stays safe.
When you come into the area that we're working, we're doing a temperature check for everybody. So they're checking or doing a scan of your forehead to make sure that you don't have a fever and that your temperature is below 100 degrees Fahrenheit. And then once you do that and you've been cleared, we ask you to put your personal belongings away in a special area.
The effort by Jose Andres is not limited to Washington, D.C. Thanks to donations and financial support from sponsors, the chef and his team from World Central Kitchen cook thousands of meals that get delivered to other American cities throughout the country as well. Andres says there is no deadline. He and his team will keep doing what they're doing as long as it's necessary. Karina Bafrajan for VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. And you can find us at voanews.com. Thank you for being with us. And thanks to our managing director, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. Have a great day.